Hey listeners, you're tuning in to a podcast about Kids in the Hall that easily veers off into mature subject matter and includes a whole heck of a lot of swearing. Enjoy the show, eh?
Welcome to Kiff and Tell, a podcast about Kids in the Hall where a bunch of millennials get disappointed by sketches they thought were much funnier as children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. We'll be reviewing every episode with witty banter and unmissable segments like, this made me feel weird, and how should I tell this lady I like about my weird penis markings?
Yes.
The Hans question.
The important questions we ask on this hard-hitting podcast. I'm Hans Seidemann, and I am in Vancouver, Canada, and I'm joined today, as ever, by Kalina McCourtoff in London, England.
The proof is in the pourri.
Also joining us from Victoria, BC, Stu Derek Kotick.
What good sex, and at such a reasonable price!
Such a reasonable price!
That's what all the ladies say about me. And finally, we also have in Vancouver here, Trevor Record.
You know, normally meat's not my scene, you dig? But this smells so groovy, I'd like to try some.
Yeah, as the you know, resident vegetarian on the podcast, were you convinced? Are you all in for poor reef now, Trevor?
Yeah, they were only mildly drugged.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to say that we're playing Cupid, not God.
All right, before we get too far into it, we'll just say we're going to be reviewing today episode 3 of season 5, which aired on October 19th, 1994. And let's kick off with our sketch rundown. We have Drumming Up Business, where the hookers try but fail to get clients because Rudy doesn't have the same money momentum skills to pay the bills as Bruce and Mark do.
Thank you, ladies, for the great sex.
And it's so reasonably priced. They need a plant. I guess Rudy's the plant, but he's just not very good at it. He's no Mark. Then we switch to How To, where a 1950s gay stereotype Buddy Cole gets a slave, brands him, and needs an instructional video on how to clean and care for
him. That's funny.
It's a lot is what
there
it is.
There is a lot going on.
Then we have Just One Guy. Mark interrupts a date with Dave and Kevin to tell them about a guy he heard about that doesn't like Dave. And shock, Mark is the guy. I know, right? Then we have rap music. The hookers are feminists, at least when it comes to rap music.
If every chick is a hoe, what are we?
Mm.
What are
just
we?
Really devalues very,
very
the
existential.
Word.
Philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we switch to Porif. The Money Momentum guys are back in action and showing us how it's done by selling cat food to old ladies by the 20-pound box. It's cheaper than dirt. Then we have Jughead, sort of a short bit weird sketch where Scott and Bruce discuss body mods, the 90s political, you know, terrain.
It's
politics, I guess. Then we have finally The Hit, where Scott tries to buy a hit from a very literal speaking Dave, who then struggles to kill himself, and then disappointingly it turns into a cop spit at the end.
I think Scott and Dave just saw Reservoir Dogs for the first time and they just wanted
We rehashed a sketch from season one but they put a Reservoir Dogs spin on it.
They,
you know,
full out give Dave a like Michael Madsen shitty haircut, and I don't understand how they do that with a wig because it looks so short.
It looks legit. I mean, I don't know. I thought Dave looked weirdly good, but like in a bad way.
Okay.
I don't know how to describe that.
Getting booted on this one?
Well, we'll see shortly.
Whoa.
We're going to talk about some toots and boots in a bit, but I think front of mind, first thing, most important thing is let's dive in with a bit of This Made Me Feel Weird. And I wanted to talk about the how-to sketch, which, as I described, a 1950s stereotype gay, this is self-described, buddy gets Kevin as a slave. And, like, it made me feel weird because there were so many bits of this sketch that I thought were very good and that were super funny, but the overall structure of it, I don't know, it made me feel weird, not necessarily in a does-this-hold-up way. Like, I don't think it's necessarily stuck in time, and it's not like it's racist or sexist or anything like that, but I don't know, I feel weird.
It's just that you're homophobic. You don't want to look at
it. Is that what it is? Am I just overly squeamish? Is it I don't get it because I ain't queer enough? Or is there something actually weird about this? Yeah, I don't know. Help me soothe my millennial snowflake.
Was he supposed to actually be Buddy in this, by the way? Or was he just...
Yes.
Okay, so he was Buddy. Okay.
But he's 1950s Buddy.
That's the thing. I'm like, it's sort of like taking place back in time, right?
Yeah. Buddy does not age.
He's just always
slavery was also not okay in the 50s, though, generally, too, right? So,
but in the sketch, they do say, "Hello, Mr. Buddy Cole."
Yeah,
this is true. Well, his brand is also a big BC.
And he has a monogrammed bathrobe, which is great.
Yeah, which has the monogram is the same as the brand. Mm-hmm. They match, yeah.
Wow. You got to put the Chekhov's rifle on the wall, man. Can't just pull that shit out of nowhere.
But I think, like, okay, so I feel like the reason it weirds me out is because we're, like, in a moment of, like, human trafficking, which, like, has always been a thing. I don't know. It just feels like it's very third rail-y right now, and, like, maybe this sketch really has nothing to do with that, and I should just get over it. But what do y'all think about that?
Your feelings are valid, Hans. You're allowed to feel how you feel. But, like, I don't know. I think it's... I like the sketch. I don't think there's anything that made me feel weird about it. So that's going to be my position going into it, but I think what it is like, third rail is a good way of putting it, that like modern sensibilities are such that when there are live political issues, the tenor, it seems now politically, is to be like, just don't joke about things that are live issues. Like there's much more avoidance, I think. Mm. Like that sort of seems to be the way that we expect people to govern themselves in entertainment. Because, like, I don't think there's anything that's, like, pro-slavery here, right? Like, they do it as a 50s thing, even in the 90s,
yes,
to be like,
true.
This is antiquated, you know, this is the gag.
No, I mean, I think, you know, I acknowledge I am, like, very ignorant when it comes to, like, the world of BDSM. It's not my scene, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But, like, my sense is that this is, like, okay, you know... slave and BDSM, I know, is very much a construct. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And people do it. And I think this was the goal here, was kind of like, oh, what if, haha, actual slave, 50s, you know, like, take this thing that is a thing we find normal and funny and just, like, transport it.
The framework is, like, 50s, not documentary, infomercial.
How to,
having a pet, right?
Yeah, exactly. How to clean and care for your slave, sort of.
Would you be find this funny if it was how to keep clean and care for your cat boy? Or, like, cat girl? Because that's a trope that's, I think, more acceptable. Right?
I think this might be kind of funny, except for the whole thing where they're kind of talked about like they're an appliance.
Yeah.
yeah.
But, like, what, I don't know, that seems more modern and is kind of thing. They're like, oh, we know that there are people who, like, not even furries, but, like, you know, like, cat girl is a thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, like, girl who has cats or a girl who behaves like a cat?
The latter.
Just wearing cat ears and stuff, you know.
Oh,
interesting. Okay. Man, I'm
out of the loop.
Yeah, no kidding, yeah.
Well, Hans, maybe you should buy yourself some cat ears and just see how that affects
your online
dating hits.
young Hans does have minor catboy energy, I'm not gonna lie.
He was a dancer, so he would be able to get the motions down well.
He was lying as hell, yeah.
I had a phase where I would be I would have made a real great Mr. Mistopheles.
The anxious loser cat?
No, Mr. Mistopheles is the magician cat. He's
there's nothing cooler than a magician.
That's
your soul patch coming in,
Mr. Mistopheles fucks. Okay?
He does not. That's a whole plot point.
What? Wait, really? Okay, I've never actually seen Cats.
Evidently not, you heathen. I have watched the Tom Hooper horror shows.
Oh, that's
times.
Right. They did a horror.
I saw it with you just
that.
Before COVID started.
I've watched it several times since then.
We got the version before they fixed all the weird stuff where the hands.
The hands. Yeah, we have to see the hands.
Saw all had human one of the last screenings of the screwed up version that was all bad.
It's all the versions are screwed up versions.
I know.
That's a bad movie.
But it was always intentionally screwed up, but then there were some unintentional screw ups where they just had weird human hand stuff and
doesn't one of the characters unzip their skin?
Yes, it's really upsetting. Every part of it upsetting, and I insist we watch it.
Mm. Can I? I mean, on a bit that didn't make me feel weird, but a bit, one of the bits of the sketch I really did love was when they have the doctor explaining the medical benefits of owning a slave, mm-hmm. and he's got a skeleton in the background that is wearing like a slave uniform yep. thing, which seemed very unnecessary, but was, I found, very amusing.
Oh, and I love the, like, if you don't exercise your slave so they keep their good musculature and sleek coat, it'll end up like this, and it's Paul Bellini in the outfit.
That was also good.
And I think he pokes him with the measure stick or something.
Oh, poor Paul.
I love Paul.
I mean, he went along with that willingly, so.
Yeah,
he likes getting poked. Yeah. I believe
his body has always been part of the humor of Kids in the Hall. Just him in a bath towel, so it makes sense. There's continuity.
Yeah, like, weirdly, I didn't have any problem with them branding Kevin. I was like, yeah, this feels.
He's a sex man.
No, I think it was really just like the bit where they're like, oh, he's going to be lonely because he's not with all his other slaves at the harem. And I was like, oh, human trafficking. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm just being overly sensitive.
Maybe. It's just such a. I think it's worth talking about. It's just such a. It's baffling to me that that's what was sticky for you.
I don't know. Well,
I agree. Yeah. With you. There are things that make me. This one really stuck in my brain. I think, like, probably seeing it so young just really burrowed its way into my brain.
I liked it, but I do think that if they were going to do it today, they'd have to make some adjustments, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the adjustments you guys made, I think, like, using the kind of slave vocabulary made me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the one thing that kind of, like, switched my mind about it a bit was the line where they talk about, like, oh, bad 1950s homosexual stereotype, which started making me think about, like, this is more almost, it can be framed as a joke about, like, what people think is happening within the household of people who are gay.
Yeah.
And right. So if you turn it that way, I think it can be redeemable.
Well, I think the other thing you're missing, too, is, like, you're taking slave as a very literal interpretation, whereas, like, slave is a role in BDSM, and it would have been much more prominent. Like, he has very, like, specific fetish gear on, and it's like that. I think that would have been more, like, risque and in the moment at the time. Whereas if you're thinking, like, oh, owning a person, like, I think they're leaning on the double entendre there, but, like, I think that's kind of what's being sticky, and that's kind of weird for me. Like, I don't know. I don't want to be like, people are too sensitive and stuff, but it's not like, oh, if we don't make comedy about it, then human trafficking will stop. Like,
true,
you know. It still happens.
And also, it's not like most human trafficking is, like, with BDSM slaves. Like, that's not the...
Yeah, but it's not white men is the issue.
Well, that's also true. Well, it is white men, just not on the other side of the slavery equation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, I don't want to belabor the point. Anyone else have any fun, exciting ideas about that sketch? I did like it in the end. I'm not...
Yeah.
Scott, please don't send me hate mail. I did like it. I thought it was a good bit, but it just...
Kevin is good in it, too.
Where they have Kevin, all those scenes from Kevin's point of view where he's scurrying around the house and showing the dangers and trouble he could get up to, and it was good, yeah.
When they're out walking Kevin and they run into the baby, mm-hmm. and Kevin just, like, runs up to the camera and, like, fully mugs for the camera with this, like, scared slave face, it was just Kevin, you're nailing it so far this season.
Oh, yeah, he's
killing
it.
Yeah, he's
I can see why he got mad that Dave was leaving.
Yeah, because he was like, it's my time.
You're giving up all this.
It's my time.
You go.
My time to shine. All right. Well, that's a good bit about that. Let's move on to one of our more recent favorite segments, Tudor Boot. So this one, October of 1994, what were some retro outfits that really tickled our fancy or made us gag?
I will say, obviously, aside from the Porif apron, in the, I guess, what are we calling it? Like, the tattoo sketch, the dinner sketch.
The body mods.
The Jughead,
Jughead, yeah.
Bruce, as the female date, is sort of wearing this, like, flowy white blouse underneath, like, a very 90s embroidered vest with a blue skirt.
Oh, yeah. I'm giving that I'm giving that
minus
a toot.
The blue skirt is a toot. I don't know if the blue pairing was good.
She's dressed as a modern woman, you heathens.
A modern woman. She's got the Watergate transcripts tattooed on her back.
That was such a weird reference that I feel like I just totally aged out.
There was a lot of Nixon stuff in this episode.
There's a lot of Nixon stuff. I mean, there was, because in Porif they had Bruce being like, who here thinks of Richard Nixon when they're having sex? Oh, just me.
I guess just me.
Well, Bruce, in both as man and woman, is thinking about Richard Nixon during sex.
Bruce, yes, you got some stuff to explain to us, man.
Yeah.
I really liked Bruce's lady there, and like that felt like a more convincing Bruce lady. I don't know why. Cause sometimes when Bruce does them, it's just sort of the mom that he always has with the tongue out, like, oh, wow. And this, something kind of get a little bit more natural to this one that I liked.
I don't know. For whatever reason, the Bruce look did not work for me, but I did like the Scott look.
I hated Scott look.
I know you did, but like, I hated his haircut. I hated
his
haircut.
What was he wearing again?
I think that's his legit.
He was wearing like a light bluish gray dress shirt, but he had this like very patterned, earth toned kind of sweater vest on over it. It was all kind of bulky. It looked it looked dumb, like a bad like 90s Mr. Rogers almost.
I think what freaked me out about it is the way he was dressed, I kept expecting that the joke would be that he's gay, because I'm like, you look super gay in this outfit.
He did look very gay in it, but I still thought it looked good. I just thought his hair sucked. But I pulled up an image of it. I really hated Bruce's vest, like floral vest thing.
What?
It just looked way too matronly for someone. Like, no one's... I'm not looking at that and going like, can't wait to take that off again.
You know
like,
what, though? Not... Maybe it's because I'm in Victoria, because I'm like... I have seen women dress like that, like recently.
Yeah, it's coming back.
They're modern women.
But it's here. I would be okay with it if it was like combined with like a shorter sleeve and like more of like a kind of a not punk, but you know what I mean.
So,
that kind of like.
So what you're saying is you can't
sure.
be attracted.
But she's got it with like a flowy
to women unless you're dressing them yourself.
No, she's just got like a big flowy.
There
blouse
was a pirate
thing
going.
Sure. Yeah, which does not work.
Oh, I love
it's
it.
Not a good look.
Hans, I do realize that you rip on Scott's hair like a lot because you hated his heartthrob middle part in the last season too.
I hated his little Dutch boy part. I hate this. I don't even know what I'd call it. It's like
honestly, it looks like Lane Stanley from Alice in Chains.
Maybe it kind of because it's not quite frosted tips, but it kind of almost looks like it. You know,
wait, Alice in Chains or Jane's Addiction? I think Allison
James. No idea, but I also don't like it.
Okay.
Anyways, any other outfits from this episode that people love?
I liked the slave outfit. I thought the slave was a two because he really committed, which was great. We got to see his flat
really
little
did.
Ass.
Well, and the mustache
helped.
Mustache
and the little hat, which surprised like his little leather hat stayed on during all of his shenanigans. Yeah. So I'm like, good job pinning that.
They really got it down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I really liked Buddy's 50 gay stereotype. Like that is a hell of a dressing gown. Loved it.
It really was, yeah.
And he did have a great fur coat when he was taking him for a walk.
Ooh, here's a boot. Yes, he did. I really envied that coat. I think he uses the coat again as the hooker, which is fantastic.
I'm looking at it now. It totally
is
the hooker coat.
No,
I
think it's a different one. No. That one's like a far more flowy than the one that the hookers wear.
Oh,
you know what?
Right,
it actually
right.
looks like it looks like Rudy's coat.
Yeah, I think it's
actually.
Rudy's.
Rudy and the hookers, by the way, evergreen toots.
Yes.
Gotta give a boot to the hippie costume in the Money Mom End Up Guy thing,
mm-hmm.
though.
Agreed.
I mean, hippies always suck, and this was a particularly nasty hippie.
I'm gonna give you another Mark boot. Mark and Just One Guy. I hated the stupid hair they gave him. It looked like he had
his
plugs.
Hair.
It
was
awful.
Oh my god.
And like
god,
unnecessarily.
Were they trying to make him look like Seinfeld or something?
It's like mullet.
Like a curly mullet.
Oh, yeah. It looked like hair plugs.
Like
a permed mullet.
Yeah.
Permed
mullet.
God, it was
bad. Did I tell you guys I got a perm in high school?
Oh, give us photos.
I think you showed us a picture of it
more.
Before. I had a real reaction when I saw it.
I want to see photos of Kalina with a perm and work boots and cargo shorts.
Show us that grin, girl.
How I didn't know I was bi, really.
Can I say another? It's not a costume because we're not going to do a full props for props bit this episode, but the front entryway of the Buddy's house in the how-to sketch. I don't know if you noticed it, but it has like a Buddy Cole monogram, this like very floral like detailing thing on the door, two statues like framing it with like marble on it. It was just, I mean,
blowing that budget.
even in black and white, it was well done for picking a good location for a Buddy Cole 1950s thing. You know, it fit. That whole house, actually. Yeah.
Last toot and boot before we get off the topic.
Sure.
You talked about Dave in the hit, because I was like, that's a Michael Madsen Reservoir Dogs suit.
Right.
You liked the hair, didn't you?
I weirdly did.
I'm so weirded out by that.
This explains a lot.
I don't know why, though. Like,
It looks like it looks like a supercut.
It looks bad. Yeah. I'm looking at it now. It looks bad, and yet I think weirdly combined with Dave's very literal personality for his character in that bit, like it lends him a severity that I think makes him sort of attractive, even if it is super.
Yeah, I'm gonna give the Dave Reservoir Dogs character a toot, but Scott's sort of mob capo, he gets a boot.
Yeah.
Oh, huge boot.
Yeah. Unnecessarily large fat suit. I think that
it literally is his boss suit from the from the arms sticking into the dead fish pools thing. I swear to God, if they opened up that trench coat, there would just be hamsters and circles, you know.
Oh, entirely.
Yeah. I got the feeling from the Dave haircut that it was like a former military guy. Like, it kind of looks like a flat top.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of interesting. Yeah. Although it does look, there's something about it that looks atrocious. I wanted to bring it up because Hanzo saw it and he's like, I hate it, but it's so good.
I didn't think it's a good look, but somehow it makes Dave look good, weirdly. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, well, that's enough talking about outfits in a 30-year-old sketch show. Let's move on to our last bit. We're going to keep it short and sweet. Mm-hmm, this episode, almost shorter than the actual episode itself. Let's hear what everyone's standout sketches were for the episode. Let's get a rating out of 5 pounds of porif. How many pounds of porif is this?
If you're just saying standout, then it's still got to be the how to care for your slave.
Yeah.
It's definitely a standout, even if you don't feel comfortable about it. They put the most love into it.
Yeah, that one swings for the fences.
Yeah,
yeah, it really does.
That's a good point. And that one has the most gags. It is the most out there. If we're talking about just like
most GPM gags per minute,
most dints. If we're excluding that one because it's by far the most like obvious.
It's the most
the most
sketchy.
Most. I like the hit. I think like it's kind of dumb, but like I like the way that Dave goes for it in like kicking his own ass, which and like he really sells the struggle of trying to, you know, and he does like the hard boiled detective thing where it's like this is gonna be harder than I thought.
I thought the sketch wasn't really working until he started fighting with himself, but I thought that needed to get more prominence and go on, maybe not longer, but I don't know. There needed to be more of that and less of everything else in that sketch, I felt like. And also that sketch was like long.
Ooh.
It was another 6-7 minute long sketch.
Talking about props for props, they like had a bunch of that warehouse rigged, which I really appreciated. Like he shoots off a vent and it shoots out steam, and then one of the lights that falls.
Yeah,
I liked that.
Yeah, he also that's a really good call for the props for props. There's another good prop bit in that one, which is the it's not a prop. Well, I mean, it is a prop, but the briefcase full of 100 Canadian bills.
Yeah.
Love seeing it's not Borden. Who's on the 100? I think it's just the Queen again, wasn't it? Or at least these old money ones.
Hello.
Hope she's resting. Kalina, what about you? What's your favorite sketch from the episode?
I like Porif. I love our money momentum boys. They're so good.
It was the disappointment in your voice with your I like Porif.
Where does Porif in your mind stand up against the other money momentum guys?
Just they're perfect swindlers, like and I love that they've maintained the same structure of like asking old people about whether you know they hate government taxes, whether they fantasize about Richard Nixon during sex, and then the dimmed lights when Mark comes in to tell the plant story.
Oh.
And but even the origin story about Porif, it's like, you know, once upon a time took a cow and a pig that were only mildly drugged. It's just we put them together in a cage and forced them to do what eventually became natural.
Yeah, like that's really funny, and I like the I don't come to your work and jump on the bed. She goes, I don't get it. It's like not since Expo 67. Like, just there's something about
Bruce and Mark just have such a natural, like, good patter,
right?
as the money momentum guys.
Also, man, what a good Canadiana moment of Expo 67. Like, man. Not even trying to be American.
Yeah. I like the, like, another layer they have with these money momentum guys that is at this point they're slipping in little jokes to each other all the time, too. Where it's like, you never get quite enough. He's like, just like women, am I right?
I loved when he did that line, two women in the audience audibly groaned, and that was, like, the only audience response was just, like, two women being disappointed in Bruce and Mark.
This is too big of a topic for right now for this question, but it maybe occurred to this. Is Kids in the Hall a girl show? Because I noticed there's a lot of... There's a, like when you think of comedy, it tends to be kind of gendered. It'd be like, guys like this comedy, girls like this. Not that I agree with it, but like it tends to fall into certain camps. And I notice when we watch these and there's audience reactions, I hear women's voices way more often than men's voices. And like...
I feel like it might be an even split.
Which, it's but even of, that is probably was, more towards women than most other comedy shows.
But I suppose this was a time where we didn't have sketch shows or a lot of stand-up female comedians that were prominent, you know? So, I mean, it is interesting because, I mean, both my parents watched this religiously, and my mom and all of her friends that I remember growing up with, like, all loved it. So I think there was like an accessibility about it, especially with the queerness, I think, that made it a bit like subversive and like almost feminist in some cases for the time. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just made me think about it because we were watching the last episode and they cut to the gay bar and like the audience went, woo! And like eight different female voices just cheered that they saw.
I don't think though, having like, I mean, maybe some of you have gone to recordings. I don't feel like your kind of audience can really be representative necessarily of the wider demographic that watches it, but
I was gonna say I started watching the show because my sister was watching it and I wanted to like see what she was laughing so much at, so like I got into it through her, my older sister, and like when you know, I would say, you know, not that Twitter is representative of anything, but I feel like a lot of the people that follow us, like more of the people that follow the show on Twitter are women than men too, or at least like it's closer to a 50-50 split, which I wouldn't have expected necessarily, right?
Obviously, I talk about this show constantly to everyone who listens to me, and a lot of the people who like it are either are women, or if they're men, they're like kind of like weirdo men.
Well, and if you think about when we talked to Rebecca Klatka, like she was, I think her experience gives some example as to maybe why it skews maybe more women than men, or more than like other shows of its era might have, in that like she certainly saw it as like representing, like she loved that it had like that kind of queer content and the drag and all that other stuff. Whereas I feel like men of the early, like late 80s, early 90s, would be a little bit more resistant, or at least your average, you know, primetime TV watching guy was maybe not going to be as tuned in or excited by a bunch of queer content, right? So,
well, one of the things we love about it, not just queer content, is like Kids in the Hall screams not even counterculture, but just like not mainstream, you know? And I think at this time too, it'd be like straight guys would be following the mainstream a lot more. So I think the show appeals to more outsiders, and like women are outsiders kind of perennially.
I do think though too, it targets people better than a lot of shows of the era did, right? Like, I mean, we've always joked about how, or not joked about, but talked about how Cabbage Head, like that another sketch show would have just done Cabbage Head, where Cabbage Head is a funny guy because like he says, well, we're all thinking, and right from season one, like they have Cabbage Head, but it's like, yeah, look at this fucking asshole, and the whole point is to show how much of a dick he is. And I think that would have been very refreshing for people watching TV at that time. We have gone way off topic. All right, Trevor, what was your favorite episode, Trevor? Or your favorite sketch? Favorite episode of the whole show ever, yeah.
I was giving it to the How to Care for Your Male Slave one, because despite your qualms about it, I think that's the one where they batted for the fences. And second would be Parif, though, if we're just going for like a standard sketch.
Yeah.
Oh, right. I started to ask, but then we got distracted. But Kalina, where do you think Parif stands among the oeuvre of the Money Momentum guys?
You love saying oeuvre.
It's my new interstitial. It's amuse-bouche. My new amuse-bouche. Yeah, I get fixated.
Okay. Wait. So we had three
original Money Momentum. We had the Gimmel 2000. Yeah. We have the clown at the hospital thing. We have. There's one other one too. What is it? God, isn't there one other one?
Maybe. No, I think that's it.
Okay.
I mean, Money Momentum is the original. It's my favorite.
Wow. Look at him eat money.
It is. Money. Look at Gord eat money. I think about that so often.
I think that's why Parif left me a little underwhelmed this time, is because I'm always wanting it to be as good as the original Money Momentum, and it never quite lives up to it, it feels like. But You can't. It's kind of like Gavin. I love the OG Gavin, right? Stu, was How To your top sketch as well?
Yeah, I think so. And I think my backup is going to be the hit. Although I do really, I'm thinking about it and I'm really torn between that and Poor Reef just because I like Bruce so much in those. But I'm going to give it to the hit because it's out there. It's weird and dumb. And I for some reason, it really tickles me that Dave is just so dense in that. And he's like, you want me to do something in addition to killing the guy? He's like, no, I want you to kill somebody. He's like, oh, I can do that. Like, he plays it so straight, which I love.
God, I found that frustrating because I felt like there was so much potential there and I felt like it never quite landed. But I don't know.
I think it's just Scott and Dave don't have good chemistry in it. Because I think Dave is really good in it and Scott's, it just doesn't click. But I like the concept. The premise.
Well, for my own part, I agree with you. Despite my feeling weird about it, How To gets my top billings for the week. There's so many good bits to it, especially. I give it 4 pounds of Parif out of 5. I don't know about the rest of you. Where do you go with yours?
I'm gonna give the hit 3 pounds of Parif, heavily discounted with the extra ash added in for my glossy coat.
All right. Yeah. You know, let's see. Where are we at here? I've lost the plot.
Ouch.
Here we go. All right.
Get us out of here.
All right. Well, that's it for our episode 3 review. Join us next week for episode 4, shockingly, 4 comes after 3, which will be hosted by none other than Kalina. Woo. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter. And maybe also Instagram. Depends on
Instagram. How
hard of a work pig I am at the end of the day. But if we are there, and if Twitter still exists, you can find us at Kith and Tell Pod. please throw some messages our way. Weigh in with some your favorite sketch for this episode and enjoy some delightful gifts. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Kith and Tell. Boy. Poor Reef.
You're all hosed in my eyes.
Thank you, ladies, for the great sex. It's so reasonably priced.